It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA, recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Victoria will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Victoria. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Duncan will read the steps.
Hello, my name is Duncan and I'm an alcoholic. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will first and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Elizabeth will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic. And the 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Thus, problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is George.
Hi, everyone. My name is George. I am an alcoholic. Wow. Great to be here. What an amazing... I never came over here this early. I came over at 6, and it was just such an amazing vibe in this hall, and to see all the little satellite groups and going on. All I wanted to do was just sit down with a little group and, you know, read from the book, as most people were doing. God willing, you know, July 2nd, I'll have 17 years of sobriety. Thanks. And, you know, for the new person in here tonight, that took a lot of hard work. It took going to meetings daily. I got sober on Staten Island. Groups like the KISS group, Keep It Simple, Stupid, the Goya group, Get Off Your Blank, at the South Beach Psychiatric Center, you know, all places that, sitting on the bar stool for my entire adolescence in my 20s, I could never, you know, I mean, I was afraid to go to places like the South Beach Psychiatric Center. I mean, I wouldn't even drink nearby it, but that's where I spent my Friday nights, you know, and Saturday mornings, and in church basements all over Staten Island. So that's where I got sober. It's a great place to get sober. I'm a son of ACOA through and through. My dad was a heavy hitter, New York City fireman. He drank a case of Schaefer a day and went to work. That's what he did. And so I learned that I wanted to be just like him. Yeah, you have a New York City fireman as a dad. You have a built-in hero. And I wanted to be just like him, so I did everything just like him. So as soon as possible, I wanted to drink. And I started with sipping his suds of Schaefer and Rheingold and Schmitz. And whatever was on sale, that's what we drank. And at the local distributor. And so, you know, by 13, 14, I was drinking regularly, weekend drinking with the guys, the kids in the schoolyard, and keg parties in the woods and all that kind of stuff. And it turned my dad's drinking into an art form. You know, by 15, 16, I'm completely alcoholic and addicted and in trouble and always at the wrong place at the wrong time, always getting arrested, always getting picked up, always walking home in the middle of the night drunk and high as a, you know, 15, 16-year-old just shouldn't be. But that's the way it was for me. I was alcoholic through and through. I had no, my first psychiatrist said to me, don't worry about it. You had no shot. You had no choice growing up. You know, where you grew up, you had no choice. Just sit down and cooperate with us and you'll be okay. So by, you know, by the end of June 91, this time of year always brings me back there. It was just, you know, hiding out and, you know, getting high and drinking around the clock. And it was really, really dark. You know, it was really dark. And I always had a loving family. So wherever I was hiding out, I'd always hear my sisters driving around yelling my name. And I'd be hiding under someone's bed or in someone's closet and with, you know, blinds pulled down. And that's my alcoholism really, really had me. I was incapacitated when I drank and when I got high, and I thought I liked it. I remember telling my first therapist how much I loved doing the things I was doing, you know, and he'd say, how could you like smoking cocaine? How could you do that? And it's like pouring gasoline on your head and igniting it. How could you possibly say you like that? And I enjoyed the feeling. I enjoyed getting loaded. And So July 2nd, 91, by the grace of God, I was able to stop, and I never looked back. You know, I've heard in many rooms over the years, you know, you could look in the rearview mirror, just don't stare. And I've looked back many a times over my life and where it was and what happened, and maybe things could have been different. Could have been a better student if I wasn't getting high all the time and drinking through high school and college. I could have went to better schools. I could have got better jobs. I could have made better choices. But I had no choice. And on July 2nd, 1991, I was given a choice. I went to it wasn't my first AA meeting, but it only took me 3 months. I started going to meetings in March of 91, and July 2nd, 91, I got it, and for good, for today. And you know, it's been an amazing ride. It's been an amazing ride. I've always gone to meetings. I've always done service. My sponsor was Scott R., who I love and miss dearly and deeply. One of the most intimate relationships I've ever had in my life. He was an extraordinary member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember the last time he spoke here a couple of years ago. But, you know, he'd always say to me after, you know, every inventory I read to him, he'd always say to me, he'd often say to me, I just ask one thing of you, George. I'd say, what, Scott? And he'd say, just pass this on to a new guy. That's all I ask. And he'd also often say that didn't have to do anything, but that he had to do what he was doing to stay alive. And I always knew it then. And he said, George, you don't have to do anything, but I need to do this and take these calls from you to stay alive. And he understood, as most of us do, the power of alcoholism. And I understood that before I met Scott, but it really got, you know, hit home when talking to Scott on a regular basis for the last 7 years. So, I've always done service. I've always been sponsored. You know, I've always had that sense, like Earl says, you know, Earl H., that I have no business walking this earth unattended. I always love that. And, you know, I've always been afraid not to be sponsored and not to be checking in with somebody to tell them what's going on with George. What am I really up to? As Scott used to say, if you're new, we, you know, pull one of us over after the meeting and tell us your plan. We want to know your plan. And, you know, early on, I still have plans today, alcoholic plans, but early on I had plans too. And I'm always glad I shared most of them. Not all of them, but I shared most of them. And I've been able to stay out of trouble for the most part in sobriety. I've never gotten arrested in my 17 years. I don't think I've even spoken to a New York City policeman in 17 years when that used to be a regular occurrence, you know, escorted from Shea Stadium or, you know, pulled over on the side of, you know, Highland Boulevard in Staten Island, loaded. And, you know, I've never gotten into any jackpots since I've gotten sober. So I am deeply indebted to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm just extraordinarily grateful that I got sober in AA and I stuck. You know, I stayed here and I continue to stay here, and I want to continue so my good friend Eddie said before the meeting, I thought was just a wonderful thing. He said, "Let the healing begin, George." It's been a very, very difficult year for many of us in here, or that knew and loved Scott and that worked with Scott and had relationships with Scott. It's been a very difficult year, and Eddie told me before the meeting, "Let the healing begin," and I love that. So thanks.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Cassandra.
Hi, I'm Cassandra. I'm an alcoholic. Chugging water. Had the, you know, privilege of doing talking through some amends with my sponsor before I got up here, and You know, and she just reminded me that, like, I have a purpose up here, and it's not to, you know, sound good. It's just to, you know, help the newcomer as, like, you know, I have a lot of fear of, you know, just looking good, sounding good, and I think nothing kind of counters that fear than, like, purpose. People have told me faith is the opposite, but, like, faith gets confusing for me sometimes. But just that purpose of talking to other people and seeing what I can, like, bring to a situation as opposed to what I can get out of it. So I'm an alcoholic, and I think that fear that I have right now is is something that it's very, I don't know why I'm not used to it. I've had it since I was very young, and a lot of it I had, you know, just, I remember walking into my first day of preschool and just, like, looking out at these kids, and I just was like, you know, she's blonde and he's smart. I think his dad's a doctor, and just like that. I think that was kind of me just in that, you know, my first day of kind of terminal uniqueness, you know. I started kind of building my case against how I wasn't like the rest of the world, and I really, really thought it was real, you know. I really had thought it was real at a very young age. But, you know, what the thing that really, I guess the thing that was real was that I was just so scared. I was so scared of people. And I just ran to the teacher and I started doing math problems and, like, becoming a teacher's pet, you know. And so when I first came and started to, like, do the steps with my sponsor, you know, and I started to hear, you know, in meetings that, you know, we were born with this disease, that was one of the memories that stuck out for me, that I was born with a lot of fear, and that's kind of how I process my life. And you know, when I picked up drinking at, like, 13, and it was the first time that, you know, I didn't have that, like, you know, suffocating fear. And it was the first time that I remember I was totally self-seeking. There was, like, this group of, like, punk rock. I was, like, really nerdy and, like, had a unibrow, and I was just, like, really, like, awkward. And there was this girl with, like, a, you know, and she was, like, I think she listened to, like, Black Flag, and I was like, oh, cool, she's, like, talking to me, and, like, and I was like, okay, and you know, and she was just like, you know, I'm gonna go to this party, and, you know, and I felt so, I wasn't talking, and then everybody was like, you know, what are you getting? And you know, I was like, you know, everybody was like, Mad Dog, Mad Dog, Mad Dog, and I was like, I'm getting Mad Dog. And then and so I got it, and you know, when I got it, I didn't know what I had drank before, but I never was, you know, drunk. You know, I was around the stuff a lot growing up, but when I drank it, I was just like, I drank it, first of all, I drank it fast, and second of all, like, I got, like, a round of applause. I was like, yes. I was like, you know, because I think they just saw this, like, nerdy kid that was just, like, that just slammed it, and I joke around, like, I felt kind of like, it was what, I was always looking for something that I was just good at, that I didn't even have to work at, you know? And I felt kind of like a genius of drinking, and I was definitely that, and, you know, and that story, when I first read Bill's story, just that, you know, you hear it a lot, but that I had arrived, I really had that, and I, you know, pursued that for the rest of my drinking career. And, career, whatever that was, I pursued, like, that feeling of, you know, just, I just kind of wanted a round of applause for, you know, just being who I was, and actually not really looking or listening to people. Bless you. And you know, I think, in retrospect, you get sober and you realize that you get sober and basically you start to realize about your bottom, like, a lot, like, and you start to realize things, I start to remember things that I didn't remember. And I remembered that, like, my life got really unmanageable very fast. And, you know, by the time I was, like, 15, I was kicked out of school. 16, I was living with my mom. I got sober at the age of 26, so it was 13 years of this. And it was a lot of control and then going for it and control and then like going for it again. And so quitting, you know, there was a lot of that. And I thought that was the proof of why I wasn't an alcoholic. And I realized when I walked into my first meeting and heard other people talking that, it was kind of like I knew the medicine worked, but I wasn't quite ready to admit that I was an alcoholic. I was pretty sure you were, but I wasn't sure I was. But there was that mustard seed of identification that I heard myself being articulated back to myself much better than I ever was able to. And, I kind of kept coming back, and I didn't understand why. And then, I just started to hurt really bad. And about 8 months in of not drinking, I basically like decided that I was either going to kill myself or I was going to have to, you know, pick up a drink again. And that's kind of how it comes, like, it break it, like, that's kind of how I approach my, sobriety today. Like, I have to do the work, or I may not pick up a drink, but I'm not going to be, like, in public. I'm going to be alone in my apartment. You know, I was sober, like, for a year, or off and on again for a year in college, and that was my proof for so long that I was that I wasn't an alcoholic. Like, I was alone, and I was not talking to people, and I was too scared to even look at you in the eye. And so when I realized that I did have this thing, and I started doing the steps with my sponsor, and I realized, and that's that kind of second step proposition, you know, that like you have to find a power greater than yourself. Or you will pick up that drink, or you'll pick up the fear, or you'll just pick up the complete unmanageability. And, and that was the biggest thing for me, was that I had to find a higher power. I had to find something that was bigger than that feeling that I had, that fear that I had when I walked up to another individual, when I walked up to another human being, and I was just like, I'm scared of you, you know? And so I got really into my life, like I got really into my prejudices and turned them over and kind of turned them into like something that's bigger than myself. And, the reasons that I thought I was unfixable, those are the things that I'm so fixable today. Like I've seen like my, like when I said that I'm like confused about faith, I'm confused about like a lot of things, but my, you know, a lot of people have told me that the steps kind of work in spite of yourself. And I get that because I can talk to people today. I don't think I ever was able to really listen to another human being ever. Like, and I realized that, you know, I could hear people like better, not just in AA meetings, but people who, like, you know, people at my job, people who I was pretty sure that I was better than or worse than, and actually stopping and looking people in the eye. And that's been something that I don't really understand how that is exactly my faith, but that's kind of how it's worked for me so far. And you know, I guess just to say to the newcomer, like, you know, you can have like tons of evidence. I've had tons of evidence as to why I thought I, wasn't an alcoholic and that this wasn't going to work for me. And I'm the hesitant, like defiance, like dogs my like every step. And somebody reminded me that like defiance isn't as blatant as it maybe once was, but defiance for me a lot of times is just keeping things within. And if I'm just willing to like talk to somebody, to turn it over to something that's like greater than myself, it started out as my sponsor and now is my, you know, like a God that I'm very close to, you know, then, you know, that's going to keep me coming back, and that's like my medicine to keep me from, you know, that first drink. So thank you.
Tonight, our main speaker is James.
My name is James McClain, and I am an alcoholic. And I've been watching David do this for months now, and I've always wanted to do it, so I took it upon myself. You know, I know that I'm an alcoholic. First of all, I'm a swayer, so if I start swaying away from the microphone, you know, please yell at me, and I will get back to it. And, you know, thank you to the two speakers before me. We've already had a great meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We heard about the disease, and we heard about recovery, which is, you know, what this podium is for. I know that I'm an alcoholic because I was sitting there, and I noticed that there were only two bottles of water on the table, and I was sure, my first thought was, I was sure they forgot me. You know, there's, you know, and then George didn't take the bottle of water. I thought, maybe I get two, you know. So I know I belong here, you know. And I really appreciate you guys' talk for getting me out of my head and, you know, helping me to remember why I'm here, what I'm supposed to do. So what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to, in a general way, tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And, you know, what I'd rather do is tell the stories of all the people in this room. There's so many heroes in this room. This is a great place to be, a great place to get sober and stay sober. I mean, I am encouraged and inspired on a regular basis, you know. Every time I bump into people on the street, on the phone, and in these meetings, it's a wonderful place to be. So anyone who's new to this meeting, welcome to my home group. It's a great place to be. I really don't remember a lot of my childhood. You know, I have very little childhood memories, honestly. You know, one of the first memories I have is I don't remember whose house it was at, but I was sitting on the far side of a bed, and I had a beer and a Playboy, and it worked. It really worked, you know, and I don't know if it was the beer or the Playboy, but whatever it was, you know, it just worked. You know, I've kind of been chasing that ever since. And, you know, that's kind of my story, just, you know, add a few cars in a few different locations, and, you know, you got my drunkalog. I had all the chances. I have had a wonderful life. You know, I had a mother that loved me, a father that, a mother was crazy, but that doesn't make me an alcoholic. She loved me. She wanted me to have all the best in my life. I had a natural father who, apparently, she divorced him when his girlfriend kept calling the house. For some reason, that bugged her. And she married a man, George McLean. My name is James McLean, and you know, who adopted me. And he's just an incredible man. If I could be half the man that he is, you know, I'm in a good place. And so I've been given a lot. You know, I don't know why family get-togethers. They think it's funny to talk about things that have happened. The one they brought up over this, I spent the weekend at Fire Island for Father's Day, and that's a gift of sobriety that I get to show up and that they want me there. I was told about the trip. There was a time when I wasn't told about trips, and I would do things like my father was driving me down the East Coast to look at colleges, and he didn't understand, but I met some new friends at the pool one night. And, you know, we were supposed to be visiting colleges. We'd visit a college. I met some new friends at a pool. And what do you do with new friends? You go out. So, you know, it's something. I came crawling back in at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he was sitting there with a suitcase on the bed, and he just wasn't pleased with that. And this is the kind of thing that I did again and again and again. You know, back at the time of the Playboy and the beer, there weren't a lot of consequences. You know, as time progressed, there were consequences. You know, neighbors were leery of having me around, or you know, I would break my father's heart yet once again. You know, I would not show up for a friend. I was lucky with cars in the beginning. It was just little fender benders here and there, not a big deal. But it would just be, you know, I'd go over to a friend's house, and you know, we'd break into the father's liquor cabinet. We'd make drinks, and they'd all want to go out, you know, and ride bikes around the neighborhood. And I just want to keep drinking. And I didn't understand it then, but alcohol really worked for me. It just made me okay, you know. So I went away to college. And I finally did get into one, and it progressed. You know, I did what we all did. There was a place called Dahlia's Bar and Grill in Greensboro, North Carolina. I used to get mail there. I used to get phone calls there. My life was these parties. I'm not particularly brilliant. I'm not particularly motivated, you know, and alcohol just made it okay. There was a guy back in L.A. who talks about, there's an expression that says the lights are on in nobody's home, and for an alcoholic, the lights are off in everybody's home. And that was my story. The lights were off. I had no idea what was going on, and everybody was home. You know, and alcohol just made it okay. Alcohol just made it better. I could look you in the face. I could go through the day. I could dance with the girl. I could, whatever it was that I had to do, I was able to do it. And so alcohol really worked for me. You know, I by the grace of God and probably a few teachers who didn't want to see me back again, I got to graduate college. And I think I had a 2-point something, whatever the lowest is that you can have. And it's not something that I'm proud of, but that's, you know, that's my story. And again, it was a wonderful school and a lot of wonderful opportunities. And, you know, what I did was I drank them away because I just didn't know how to fit in. I didn't know how to belong. And, you know, I mean, I went through the regular progression of alcoholic jobs. And, you know, one of my favorite was I got fired from a Benetton buying office, you know. I can't match, you know, two black shirts, you know. So I had no business being there in the first place. I spoke Italian, so they hired me. And when they finally let me go, the poor guy was just really upset about, you know, having to fire somebody. I guess I was a nice enough guy. But, you know, they said, do you want a bonus? You know, we're going to fire you bonus. They were really nice. And they had received this huge bottle of champagne as a holiday gift. And I said, could I have that instead? So what do you do when you get fired from the buying office of Benetton? You take your big bottle of champagne and you move to Brooklyn. And that's what I did. I moved in with two friends, and they like to drink the way I like to drink. And we had a fine time. You know, and I went through a series of other jobs, and you know, all of whom I owe amends. You know, at this point I wasn't drinking at work, but I was certainly drinking after work, and I liked those funny little cigarettes, so I would smoke those in the morning. I would shake, kind of like I'm shaking now for speaking, but I would shake because of, you know, detoxing from alcohol in the mornings, and I didn't know it was an alcohol detox. But a few funny cigarettes and a big sugar donut would kind of make the shaking okay. You know, until lunchtime. And at lunchtime, I would go hang out with Ava, because I know that Ava used to drinks the way that I do. And if I'm taking her out for a business lunch, I have no choice but to drink with her. And then that's how things began to progress. And, you know, at this point, I'm working for a company on 52nd Street. I'm living in Hastings, New York, and everybody knows that there are no alcoholics in Hastings. And I had an alcoholic car, a little Honda Civic with round edges, and you know, it's the kind of thing that I did. What, there's nothing new here. I mean, I did what we all do. I lost my car on a regular basis, and there was nothing more exciting than finding your car the next day or 2 days later. Oh Jesus! You know, it was, and there are places. I have a dog, and I go to a dog park. And there's a guy who owns a bar in the East Village who walks his dog in there. And I was asking him, is there a place called the King Tut's Wawa Hut or Woo Woo Hut? And, you know, I have all these memories. You know, most of my drinking was done in blackouts, and it's just a scary place to be. You know, I went to school in North Carolina, like I said, and I woke up in Virginia one time driving. You know, and you know, it is funny, but boy, is it scary. You know, and I'm really grateful, you know, and I did all the other things that we alcoholics do, drive the wrong way down the Sawmill River Parkway, you know, that's kind of cute, and, you know, end up in the wrong place with the wrong person, you know, doing things that I have no business doing, you know, and we wake up with, you know, the remorse and despair, disgust, and, you know, I was raised well. This is not what I'm going to do. This is not what I want to do with my life, and I'm not going to do it anymore. Today is going to be different, and you know, each day, not each day. I wasn't that good. But every once in a while, I'd say, today is going to be different. And you know, sure enough, you know, Ava was out of town, you know, but Heidi was coming by, and Heidi drinks the way I do. And, you know, there was always a reason to drink again, and I always did. Just, you know, towards the end, I worked for a Japanese company, and they, you know, I thought it was cute. They liked drinking, and I was a heavy drinker, so they liked me. In fact, when I got sober, I was not popular any longer. But today I really respect my sobriety. I respect the people that I work for, respect the work that I do. You know, they would have yearly audits, and I thought the audit would be help. You'd stay there until 3 o'clock in the morning figuring out where $150 went. You know, I wanted to write them a check. Just take it. Leave me alone. You know, and we had to figure out these books, and I thought that, you know, mushrooms and scotch would help. And it never did. You know, and you know, I would end up, you know, at 1:30 making 150 copies of something nobody needed just so, you know. So what happened was, you know, like I said, I just spent a weekend with my father and my family, and so it was really lovely because they like to bring up all these things. Do you remember Dad's wedding, what you were doing? Who you were? I'm like, oh, jeez. So, but, you know, you've all done that. You know, at least the people that I've talked to, you know, I know that they've done that. And, you know, so this is not, you know, I think I've identified. And the thing that makes me an alcoholic is not that I did those things. If you give my grandmother enough scotch and maybe a few mushrooms, she's going to do stupid things too. You know, but what makes me the alcoholic is that with everything I have inside of me, with all that I know, all the damage that I've done, and all the sadness that I've created, and all the real desire not to do this again, I have no choice. I'm just going to do it again. There is no choice. And so I believe that you guys prayed me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. At the end of the meeting, we hold hands, and every meeting in one form or another says a moment of silence for the sick and suffering alcoholic. And you know, and praise that we can find this, you know, haven of hope. And so I don't have any sober members in my family. I didn't at the time, and I didn't really know about Alcoholics Anonymous. But somehow, some way, I said, I'm going to give it everything I have. And if what happened was the voices stopped getting turned off. You know, I'd go out, and I'd still hear those voices. Oh, Jesus, I can't believe you did that. And I couldn't forget it. I couldn't make it go away. I couldn't feel better then, and I couldn't get away. The shame, guilt, remorse, fear, anger, everything. I just couldn't stop the insanity. And so somehow I made a deal with myself, and I said, I'm going to give it everything I have. I'm going to drop it, shoot it, drink it, pop it, you know, and I'm going to go out, and if it doesn't work, if I don't feel better, I'm going to go to one of those meetings. And so I went out and I gave it everything I had, and I had never followed through on anything. If I told you I was going to be there at 2, you know, you'd be lucky if I showed up next week. You know, I never followed through on anything, and that's why I believe that you guys prayed me into the room. I went to a meeting the next day. It was a Thursday night meeting. It was over by the Port Authority, and I had every good reason not to go. As I'm going there, there's people passing out on the streets. You know, I used to pass out in Hastings, not in New York. Come on, what do you think I am? You know, I used to pass out in Pakistandra. I wouldn't pass out, you know, in the curb somewhere. At least I passed out in classy places, like my car or a bench. But anyway, so I'm going to these meetings. I'm going to this meeting. I'm walking there, and I'm thinking every single reason that I shouldn't be there. You know, I have no business being here. What is this anyway? And I go into this meeting, and this little guy comes over and hugs me, and I'm like, oh, Jesus, I'm really in the wrong place. They're hugging me now, you know, and he brings me a half a cup of coffee, which I was pissed off about too. And again, it's like when you guys forgot my water, you know, why do they bring me a half a cup of coffee, it's, you know. And he asked me to sit down. I mean, I can tell you only two other things about that meeting. One is that I'm sitting here judging the guy who's talking. You know, he's got one gold tooth, and he's talking about selling his coat to buy some crack cocaine, and I didn't identify. I never did crack cocaine, and thank you. And I just started crying. You know, I'm looking down at my shoes like any good alcoholic newcomer does. But, I mean, that's what I did. I sat in the middle of the room and I started crying. And I started feeling, the F word, a feeling. And I really didn't want to be there. And I was going to leave, except there was a really big guy with about 2 pounds of gold on his neck by the door. And I knew it was his job to keep people like me in the room. So I stayed. And after the meeting, Jimmy, this little guy, Jimmy, who is not this Jimmy, but this is, now I'm happy to hug Jimmy. But there was Jimmy said, "Why don't you come back? We're having another meeting tomorrow." And, you know, you've heard it said before, but I'll say it again. You know, I had never been invited back anywhere in a long time. So, you know, I said, sure. And, you know, what I did in the beginning was I went to 2 or 3 meetings a day. You know, I just vibrated from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting. I spent a lot of time in the mustard seed. And I'm sure I owe them an amend somewhere just for being there. But, you know, this was the good old days when they were smoking meetings. Yeah, and then we could smoke out back, I think, at the time. I don't remember if we could smoke inside. But my favorite were the half and half meetings where this half of the room could smoke and that half couldn't. You know, alcoholics. So I went to a lot of meetings. I went to a lot of meetings. And, you know, I was at this meeting and I left, and this guy Lou comes up to me and he says, you know, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, if you ever want to get high or drunk, give me a call. And I'm like, dude, we just left a meeting. You know, and I realized what he said, and so I asked him to be my sponsor. And so he's a nice guy. He told me to call him every day. I thought he was crazy. And I started calling him, and then he brought me this thing called a big book, which I didn't really find out too much about until later on. And he wanted to read it and go through it with me, and I realized I had made a really bad mistake. And so I got another sponsor, and who was also called Lou. One was L-O-U, and the other was L-E-W. And so I had two Lous for sponsors. And having no backbone at all, I couldn't tell the first Lou about the second Lou. And in these meetings, when you take your cake, when you have an anniversary, the sponsor shows up to give you the cake. And that was my first real humility in Alcoholics Anonymous, when both sponsors showed up to give me a cake. And they had a great time, I got to tell you. Alcoholics Anonymous are wonderful. You know, if you do that in the real world outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the two is going to be pissed. These two guys roared, they had the best time. So, you know, and I learned a lesson. You know, I learned that I can fall on my face and be a goofball in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a beautiful thing. And actually, I lied. That was probably my second lesson. My first lesson was commitments, a plug for commitments here. I don't know, I'd been going to that Thursday night meeting a couple of weeks, and they said, we're going to give you a commitment, you're going to do ashtrays. And I said, you know, look, I'm wearing a suit, what do you want me to do with ashtrays? And they wanted me to clean the ashtrays. And what happened is I became the best ashtray cleaner in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I became part of that meeting. You know, that meeting was my meeting. As soon as the Lord's Prayer was done, boom, I was out there. I got those ashtrays, and I cleaned them up. And about a month later, another new guy came in, and they wanted to give him part of my ashtray commitment. And I got to tell you, I was freaked out. You know, it was a race. You know, as soon as we let go of hands, we both run out and see if we could get more ashtrays. You know, my problem, the big book tells me that alcohol is not my problem, that my brain is my problem, my head is my problem, my thinking. And the guy who thinks there's no water or too much water for him, one of the two. And I remember holding hands, saying the prayer, and realizing that this guy, I don't remember his name now, but this guy, you know, needed this ashtray commitment as much or if not more than I did. And that was a moment of freedom. I got to think of somebody else other than myself for just that brief moment. And I actually let him get the head start on me that day, and he got more ashtrays than I did. I have a lot of opinions, which my sponsees will probably tell you is true, and I have no problem sharing with them. Somebody asked me for my opinion, I'm more than willing to give it. And, you know, I believe in what I say because that's the way it was taught to me. And Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life. Everything that I have of value in my life is due to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I wasn't always the best sponsee. You know, I'll tell my sponsees, take off your hat, do this, do that. You know, show respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. I met the L.E.W. Lou at one of the New York dinners, and he told me that you asked your wife to marry you, and then you told me about it, and then you accepted a job in California, and then you told me about it. So I wasn't a particularly stellar sponsee myself, but you know, I try to offer the best. You know, I know that, you know, why aim for halfway? You know, aim for the top. And we were reading downstairs before the meeting, and which is my favorite part of, it's one of my favorite parts of this meeting. Sorry, Bob. It's a great meeting. You know, but I love reading downstairs before the meeting, and we were reading about how Bill Wilson, you know, talked about how he created this new way of, you know, researching stocks for, you know, and so I said, boy, he must be really famous in the world of stocks and bonds. I looked him up, and nobody's ever heard of him. So, you know, I can follow somebody like that, a man who's done so much good and so much wonder in the world, but he's a human being just like with me, with fears and an ego. I moved to California, you know, with my sponsor's blessing afterwards, and I started going to meetings out in Thousand Oaks, and it's where I met Bob W., and I didn't have a sponsor, and I did have a sponsor. But we'll talk about that later. I was at a meeting, and I said, you know, Bob, if you see Lenny, please tell him I say hi. And he said, stick around and tell him yourself. So I asked him to be my sponsor, you know. And what Bob did is, Bob, I guess I was ready to listen better than I was anyway. And what Bob did was Bob began bringing me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and bringing me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, a way that I've later learned to say it is we have a triangle here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, service, fellowship, and recovery. And so service is the commitments that I've talked about. It makes me part of Alcoholics Anonymous. It gives me a reason to be here. It helps me to feel okay being here with you guys, you know, the giants of sobriety here, and the community, the fellowship is you guys reading downstairs before the meeting, you know, talking to friends on the phone, going out for coffee or dinner, and you know that's what I did a lot of when I was here in New York the first few years. What I got in LA was I got recovery. Recovery comes from the steps. It comes from working the steps. It comes from clearing out the garbage that's in my mind and making room for our one salvation. You know, my power, the big book tells me, is not that cheap scotch in a plastic bottle that I used to drink. You know, my problem is lack of power. And you guys have given me a way to connect to that power. And that power is what we call here God, higher power, you know, whatever you want. I've heard some people call it a doorknob, but not my choice, but, you know, And honestly, my belief about that is that anyone who begins with a doorknob is going to end up with some kind of a higher power if they really are working a program, because that's just the way it works. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a program for people who want not to drink. Alcoholics Anonymous is a program for people who want to live life safe, sane, and sober one day at a time without the drinking. And there's a difference. One is, I actually went to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings many, many years ago in Summit, New Jersey. I used to work there as a custodian, and we'd set up the meeting for the bunch of, which I was sure, a bunch of old guys in raincoats that smelled like cigarettes that burned holes in the raincoats, and they would stand there at the meetings and say, I'm not going to drink today, and this is how. My boss and I would go down to the boiler room and drink, so I never really saw what happened at these meetings. But that's what I assumed. You know, and that's not what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. Alcoholics Anonymous is about achieving a freedom, and this is what you guys have given me. You know, as I said in the, how much time do I have? Okay. As I said in the beginning, everything that I have of value in my life today, absolutely everything. You know, any from you know material stuff to love and kindness in people's eyes. You know, people aren't running away from me anymore the way they used to. I'm invited back to to parties, to friends' houses, to my father. You know, everything that I have in alcohol, everything I have in this world is due to my association with Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's really simple. Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again because I like it, is what it has brought me is blue-collar spirituality. And what that means is that I get to be connected to a power greater than myself by doing simple, menial things. I come here and I clean the ashtrays. I come here and I thank the chairperson for asking me to speak. Thank you, I didn't do that. And, you know, I show up, I call my sponsor every day. I take calls from my sponsees. Alcoholics Anonymous is not complicated in what it asks us to do. I make it complicated. I make it difficult. Oh, but Helen thinks this about me, or, you know, Bonnie's going to think that, or whatever the case may be. Alcoholics Anonymous, the program, sorry, of Alcoholics Anonymous that you find in this book here, and if you don't know what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is, that get a sponsor. If you have a sponsor and you still don't know, ask your sponsor. If he or she doesn't want to tell you, make them sit down and ask them to tell you about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Program of Alcoholics Anonymous is the freedom that we, is how we get to that freedom. I'm going to end with one more quick story, and actually two, because I forgot this one I wanted to tell. Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot of fun. You know, I love this group has a lot of fun. There are things that they do. People go out. There's parties. There's always something going on. The first time I spoke at Alcoholics Anonymous was in Thousand Oaks, and it was a group of 75 people, something like that. And I was nervous. You think I'm a swayer now? You should have seen me then. And I don't think I was looking off out of my shoes yet. And I had two friends in the front row, two women who were there who had come to hear me talk. And I wanted to let Lori know that one of her buttons had come undone. And yeah, that's what I said. And you know, then there was another one undone. These two girls flashed me in the middle of my first talk, and it's really kind of, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I had forgotten, the best part about it, is that my sponsor set this up. So I wasn't nervous anymore after that. So, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot of fun. People come here to support you. That's not necessarily, that's nowhere in the book, by the way. That's not in the book. But, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot of fun. We're real people with real lives and real success stories. I'm going to tell you the promise that almost broke me when I first came in, and now is my salvation. When I just started working with Bob, he's a great guy, he's really nice, he's given me all this good information, and he looked me dead in the eyes and he said, I promise you if you do this work that your life will change and it will get better. And I said, oh man, why did you ruin it? Because everybody had promised me. You know, the Kabbalah guy promised me, the voodoo man that I was following promised me, you know, the church had promised me, this girlfriend had promised, you know, everyone had promised me, and it never worked. You know, it's because I didn't do it, but, you know, it never worked. And Bob said this to me, he looked at me and said, if you do what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I promise you that your life will get better. You will come to have a relationship with a God of your own understanding. I got to tell you, it's true. What I do, I promise you all here, this is a very simple program. It is not difficult. Get a sponsor, ask them what to do, and then here's the crucial part, do it. Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life, it's given me a life. I'm so grateful for all of you that guide me and show me the way. Thank you very much.